Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with Richard Morris of San Luis Obispo, California. Originally from Des Moines, Iowa, he served with the 20th Armored Division during World War II, getting over to Europe toward the end of the war. When we left off, it was April of 1945, and in trying to catch up with other elements of the 65th Armored Infantry Battalion, he took a shortcut toward Munich and stumbled across what he would later learn was the infamous Dachau concentration camp. Neither Mr. Morris nor any of the men with him had ever heard of it or were even familiar with the concept of a Nazi extermination facility.
Anyway, as we got close to where the doors were on this wall enclosure, they opened up and several men came out waving at us in those dirty pajama-like outfits, striped outfits, and they kept waving. So I told Sam, our driver, I said, stop for a minute and I'll run up and see what this is. So I went up and they hugged me, and they were so full of joy, and I didn't realize, you know, that we were the sign that they would be saved. And while they were holding on to me, they drugged me inside the doors. They pulled me right behind an oven and opened the door and made me look inside to see there were bodies in there. They were going to pull me to the next oven, and I noticed a huge pile of dead bodies, higher than I was, and I thought, my God, what is this? And the only thing that came to mind was they must have the Black Plague and they're cremating them to kill the germs. And so as they were pulling me in to see more, I started pulling away to get away from it and get out. And I finally got out and went back to the half track and I said to the lieutenant, do you want to see what this is? No. When I told him, he said, no, I don't want to see it. So he said, get on the radio. Well, I said, all I can tell you, there's a lot of sick men in that part of this enclosure. And so I got on the radio, and when I started to talk about it, I couldn't even explain. I said, you know, I'm giving you the coordinates of a place where there's some very sick people. They need medics, and that's all I could say about it. That same day, because we were out of our column, we got into a line of vehicles that was a mixed. We had a 2.5-ton truck in front of us. We had a tank behind us. And I decided to walk in front of us, and there was only a 2.5-ton truck in front of us. And I walked around it, and two guys in there were sleeping. So I pulled the door over, and I said, what in the hell are you doing stopping here? And they said, because there's a little bridge up front that's been bombed. It's not safe for us to cross it. So I went up and checked the bridge, and I thought, I think it's wide enough. Anyway, I thought it was wide enough for a half track. Just then, a lieutenant from the tank came up. He said, sir, can I help you? And I thought, well, yes, as long as I'm in control of things, yes. I said, get this 2.5-ton truck off the road. I said, we're going to go ahead with the half track, and you and everybody behind us can just follow us. And so we got over it okay. I told Sam, I'm going to walk in front of you. And we had flashlights that had slits in them. I'd get far enough ahead that he could see the slit, but also could see where the road was. So I led this whole column of mixed vehicles. We came to a T-crossing. I was out there in front by myself, and the guy said, halt, what's the password? And I said, I don't know what the hell the password is, but I'm from Iowa, and I want to know where the half tracks have gone that came by this corner. He said, I never saw any half tracks. So I thought, oh, good. We'd gone about probably 3/4 of a mile, and Sam said, we got to find a place to stop. We're running out of gas. So there was a farmhouse, and in Bavaria, farmhouses had the barn right next to the house. It was as clean as a house. We decided to sleep in the barn, and the half track went on one side of the building, and we had a guy on guard on the other side of the building. And I suppose this was about 4 o'clock. Well, we all settled down, the rest of us settled down in the barn on straw. And we were just getting to sleep, and pretty soon our 50 caliber went off. A young buddy named Duffy from Brooklyn was on the half track. And he said, I just saw some German soldiers coming across the field. It was just clear enough that he could see them. Well, he said, halt, and they didn't halt, so he just started shooting, and a couple of them stood up and held their arms up, and we assumed the other three were killed. So anyway, two guys came forward, and one, I'm pretty convinced, was an SS officer. He'd taken off the insignia, but he had an SS officer's outfit on and everything. The other guy was an ordinary guard. The guard kept his hands up, and he kept shaking. He was shaking so bad, we told him and the officer to sit down on the ground. Both of them, we offered them some hot coffee and some cigarettes. The irony is, I think they thought we were going to kill them. Nobody had told us what to do with prisoners. And I walked up to this officer, and I noticed a large hunk of his shoulder, his arm, about 3 inches below the shoulder, had been cut out by a 50 caliber. And when it hits the flesh, it just cut a neat strip out of there. I looked at it, and I thought, that's amazing. That's flesh almost deep enough to go to his bone. I pointed it out to him, and he said, well, he just was ignoring the pain, I think. So I had him take his jacket off, and all of us had little first aid kits, which were a bandage and little packages of sulfur. So I sprinkled the sulfur on it and put the bandage around it. I think the lieutenant says, well, what are we going to do with these guys? And we had no place to put them on a half track. So by that, it was light enough, we could see another farmhouse down the road. And we said, just go on down there. The ladies will take care of you. And so we let him go. I honestly believe we might have been dealing with the guy who was in charge of the Dachau concentration camp. He seemed like a perfectly nice guy. He was, you know, overwhelmed by our kindness. And the guy whose arms were shaking never did stop shaking, but they both left and walked down the field.
And explain to us why you believe that. I mean, I'm sure it has to do with the fact that he was an SS officer and the proximity to the camp, because you're still pretty close to the concentration camp at this farmhouse, huh?
The logic of finding them there became clear to me as I thought about it. The Dachau concentration camp is north of Munich, and we were going south to get closer to Munich. And I think these guys and perhaps other officers from the camp went through a woods. And so by the morning we were at camp there, they start coming out of the woods. Those would be the only officers I could think of that would be in the area.
And because when you were in the camp, as you stumbled upon it, had never even heard of this idea of a concentration camp, didn't know what was being done to the Jews and those other political prisoners, you didn't see any officers there. All you saw was prisoners, right?
Exactly. And another thing, we had never been given much information about the clothing or the appearance of German soldiers and officers. But the SS troops, as far as I was concerned, were the elite officer corps. And I think this man was in that rank. That day, we went into Munich. And Munich is the capital of Bavaria. And I learned later, Bavarians never really liked the Nazis. And they didn't like the Prussian attitude about fighting all the time. But they had to go along with it because Hitler had his forces were strong enough to stop anybody from disagreeing. But as we entered the city of Munich, people were putting their white sheets out of their windows and waving them at us to let us know they were happy and, you know, happy that we were coming and, in a sense, had saved them. Well, what else would you like to know? We're getting close to the end of my story.
We are, and I know some of it is easier to talk about than others, and I don't want to make you dwell on it, but it's been 70 years since that happened. It's been 70 years since all those concentration camps were liberated. And there are even people today who believe that it never happened, that these atrocities were not committed, that 6 million Jews and so many others were exterminated. But you saw it firsthand. So as painful as it might be to discuss, can you tell us what you saw, what kind of shape these human beings were in, and how devastating it was to witness all of that?
The whole scene, they looked like skin and bones. And as I think back about what I know about the Dachau concentration camp, they were the healthy ones. They were the ones that were expected to lift bodies, put them in the ovens. I learned later in the Dachau concentration camp, it was built in 38, right when Hitler started, and it was to be a prototype for other concentration camps. However, it didn't have a cellar where they gassed people. The camp was built for about 20,000 people. When it was liberated, it had about almost 40,000. For every barracks, let's say a barracks had 100 men. In every barracks where they had beds for 100 men, there would be 100 dead people also in those barracks. The Germans just let them lay there. Anyway, what that did to traumatize me, all my life I have had nightmares about somebody pulling me somewhere on my arm. And only recently did I begin to realize there's a connection with those guys pulling me into that crematorium to look at all that. It was sufficiently troublesome that I kept falling out of bed when I was sleeping with my wife, so I started sleeping on the floor rather than falling out of the bed. And I'm sure she thought it was because I didn't love her or something. And to me, it was equally confusing. But up until recent years of my life, if I have a nightmare, that's the one that scares me. And in this house, I've fallen out of the bed several times, thinking I'm being pulled towards something I don't want to go to.
So you still get those nightmares 70 years later of people tugging on you and pulling you somewhere you don't want to go.
That kind of a reaction, I have learned, is a PTSD type reaction. And that type of trauma cannot be dealt with by medicine alone. All you can do is kind of calm yourself down. And so that's what I've been doing. And the problem is, when you get out of the service, you don't talk to anybody. But I don't think I ever told anybody about the details of my experience in the crematorium. So we don't think about it. I probably should mention, though, that the captain of our company was a really nice guy. After the captain who wanted to be Napoleon, we got a really nice guy. He was a high school principal. I just liked him very much. I think he got concerned about me because before I even left Europe, I was getting terribly depressed. By the time we got to Vandenberg, there was an army camp built in the Vandenberg area, Vandenberg Air Base. It was built for half tracks because we were going to practice landing LSD boats on the shore. We learned before we actually left that camp that we were the invasion groups, and we were to be the first ones to land on the mainland of Japan.
And we're going to find out how you knew that and what further details you were given when we come back from this break. We'll also hear another eyebrow-raising story from Richard Morris's time in Germany with the 20th Armored Division. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live, because Paul Everett has a fly and buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV. It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at rvcountry.com. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.